Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mundus.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
And then a horn hit. Right there. 609, hi. Welcome back. Thanks.
Welcome back, Steve.
Welcome back, Steve.
You know how lucky we are to have this gun?
Oh, hi, Steve.
Very lucky.
Were you gone? Oh. Yes, Stephen, I was. Oh, welcome back.
Why do you say it? Yes,
why,
we
why would you think I wasn't gone? Was anyone else giving you a hard time?
No, nobody was. You're right.
Oh, then there we go.
We are very lucky, but what makes you say that?
Yeah. Well, it's because I look forward to coming back to work. How many people look forward to coming back to work after vacation?
Okay, how'd you golf?
Oh, boy. All right, I played all right. I didn't play great, but I played all right.
Oh, good.
It's fine.
That's the end of the golf discussion.
Well, let's interrupt all of this to say the following. Wacky weekend for Trump. No surprise there. Tomorrow night, vice presidential debate. Ooh, pins and needles. The Bears won, inexplicably. A tremendous Ryder Cup. Just a really, really terrific Ryder Cup.
Very cool.
Bill Belichick killed his Microsoft Surface on the sideline and should be charged with a crime. We have tons of sports to get into, tons of politics. You know, like it's Monday. It's Monday on my favorite show, the Steve Cochran Show. But then again, that's me. Let's play the music for Paul. Good morning, buddy.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Happy Monday.
Sounds like you're in a hurry. Is there trouble at Channel 9?
No. Okay. I just got off the set and listened to the first block of the news, and it's all miserable junk.
Why do you say that? What do you say? I mean, does it seem to be any different than it's ever been?
It's every day. It's like But after a while, you're like, oh, jeez. Mondays are especially difficult.
You know, I wrote a blog this weekend about how I've had to take back my endorsement of Gary Johnson.
All right.
Thank God.
All right. Well, you're in a pickle now.
Well, because I really don't have anybody, so I just want to run a couple things by you because I'm looking for a new candidate.
Yeah.
Have you ever declared almost $1 billion in losses to avoid paying taxes?
Not almost, no.
Okay, all right. All right, have you ever made fun of someone with a handicap?
Not intentionally, no.
Does that include Larry and Robin?
Yeah. Perhaps. That's a very delicate subject.
Yeah, because their disabilities are television related.
These days, yeah.
Yeah, right. Let's see. Have you ever made some sort of reference about possibly dating your daughter?
No.
Okay.
I have not.
All right. Have you ever sent sensitive email from your home privately related to work?
Yes, I have.
Oh, you have?
Yeah, I do.
God, we came so close. I really thought you were going to be my guy.
I'm sorry. That one I'm guilty of also.
Oh, so close.
Yeah, 5 out of 6 or whatever that was isn't bad.
Yeah. Well, this year, actually, it would make you a huge winner.
Yeah, just five out of six. Yeah, you and me both.
Yeah, no question about it.
Woo.
All right, so I'm still looking for a candidate. It won't be Paul Conrad.
All right, I'll check with Skilling on that. He's seemingly a likable guy.
Oh, but there's trouble there.
You got to believe there's a lot of stuff in his
I body. Believe that Tom Skilling is some sort of old Chicago crime figure, Godfather or Don.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
He does wear a big pinky ring.
Yes, he does.
Yeah, and he will be.
Yeah, that's actually weather radar. That's where the weather radar comes from, his ring.
He'll smack you down also. You go up against him, surprising, because he seems like a docile guy.
No, not at all.
He's got a fuse on him. Oh. Rip your head right off.
You know what his nickname was in college? Short Wick.
Yeah.
Oh, Short Wick on that guy.
Yeah, that's never a nickname you ought to have. Never.
Not if you're a dude.
No.
All right, how was your weekend, Paul Conrad?
Yeah, not bad. I did a lot of cleaning. I got a lot done. Dusting. I feel like maybe all these years in my life I have not been going to what my strengths are.
And you feel like cleaning is your strength?
Well, not all cleaning. I feel like I'm exceptional at dusting, and I also have a gift where I vacuum and fold chairs amazing.
What, you have folding chairs at the house?
No, but whenever there's an event and you need to set up folding chairs, like I am really
all right. So let's review then. So if you fold and unfold chairs,
and line them up,
a
straight line.
You vacuum and you dust.
I vacuum very well as long as you can see the lines. If you can't see the lines, I'm out.
Oh, I think that this sounds like you need. There's a job for you in the service industry.
Yeah, and dusting. Like, I don't dust much, but this weekend I did some deep dusting. Holy crap, I am exceptional.
What is deep dusting?
Well, it's up on the high parts, you know, that get it once every 5 years.
Let me ask you a question. Doesn't Svetlana, your mail order bride, help out?
No. This is a huge problem. And what do you do in this situation? Can't fire her. And the language thing, whenever I have a problem, she acts like she doesn't speak the language anymore.
Wasn't there a 90-day return policy on
her?
Yeah,
but I meant like 12 years or something, 15 years. So
boy.
I asked my attorney to look into it, and he doesn't speak English either. So I'm screwed. So I decided I'll do it myself.
So deep dusting, vacuuming if there's lines, and folding chairs. If you need any of those, Paul Conrad's at Channel 9.
Yeah, I'm thinking of starting up a little side business.
Dave?
When I walked into the sports studio up on the 7th floor this morning, it had been totally trashed. I spent a good 20 minutes, Paul, cleaning, and I'm exhausted.
Yeah. I'm with you. Did you do any deep dusting?
I did a lot of deep dusting.
You know what you ought to do? You ought to deep dust a few people at work here.
Yeah, I think that's next.
What happened in here, by the way, Dave?
Yeah, that was
disaster.
Prop dusting.
I don't know.
Oh, my goodness.
The ceiling fans, is
wait
that
a minute,
deep
Grzanich
dusting?
Is asking ceiling, what happened, the guy that leaves turkey dinner on people's desks every day?
No, I don't do that. There's like stuff everywhere scattered. Okay. I mean, it's like somebody went crazy up there.
Careful, pot. The kettle's behind you. All right, let's do this. 6:15, you go back to work.
All right.
I'll start the show again.
Love you.
I love you back.
All right, be careful.
All right, you too. I don't know what that means, but I will. Sounded like a threat in some weird way.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Hey, Adam Hall.
Hi. Can you give us any insight into the plan for Thursday?
Not really.
What can you tell us about Bear Jones, and is he ready if he needs to be?
Ready for what?
Adam Hogue, standing by. Good morning, Mr. Hogue. How are you?
Morning, guys.
Well, stand by for the sponsor. Here's your announcer.
Adam Hogue's coverage of the Bears, sponsored by C.J. Wilson Mazda.
You know, I look at this game yesterday, Adam Hogue. Let's talk a little Bears here. I look at this game yesterday the same way I looked at the debate. It's not like Hillary Clinton won. Donald Trump lost. The Bears were way better, but Detroit was awful.
Yeah,
Detroit lost.
Detroit was terrible. Then they really Lions that game away, which... You know, I guess it's a good thing the Bears won, because as I told you guys last week, the Bears had not beaten the Lions since Lovie Smith was the head coach. So, you know, you take it any way you can get it. It's a home victory, which you'll take. It had been 363 days since the Bears had last won at home, which is sad. So it was good.
Of course it's good, because a win's a win. And now we've got a lot of people trying to start up a quarterback controversy that Brian Hoyer is the new Tom Brady.
Let's be smart here, Bears fans. I mean, let's really step back and look at this thing. Brian Hoyer has been in the league for 8 years.
How old is he?
He is 30-ish? Right around 30, 31.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, me too.
It took him 5 years before he even got a chance to be a regular starting quarterback. There's a reason for that. And that was with the Cleveland Browns. I don't know if anyone's paid attention to the Cleveland Browns.
Terrific team. Terrific organization.
Yeah, great organization. They have no problems, and they've always had great quarterbacks, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, they haven't, which is why Brian Hoyer got a chance there, and he only had an okay season, enough to get signed by the Houston Texans on a 2-year contract, about $10.5 million. They still gave the starting job to Ryan Mallett last year, who is no longer in the NFL because he couldn't show up to a team meeting on time.
So let's not get too jumpy here, is what you're saying.
Right. And then once Hoyer got the job last year, once they got sick of Ryan Mallett, he did okay. He did a fine job. And then the playoffs came around, and he throws 4 interceptions. What did the Houston Texans do? They gave Brock Osweiler a ton of money. They released Brian Hoyer. Osweiler's not even as good as Jay Cutler. So let's be careful here. His track record, Brian Hoyer's track record, is that he's a borderline NFL starter. To me, that means you're a good backup. So the Bears have a good backup. Just be happy that they have one.
Yeah, I would agree with that. How long before Mr. Cutler's back?
It's a good question. He got out there on the practice field last week. I don't think it went very well. He didn't do a whole lot. He didn't have the brace on his hand, which was a good thing. But obviously, whatever sprain is going on in his thumb and those ligaments, I think it's significant. So my guess is he'll give it another go in practice this week, see how it goes. I would not be surprised, though, if Brian Hoyer gets at least one more start. But it'll probably be something they determine after Jay gets out there on Wednesday and throws the football a little bit.
Adam, the best thing I saw out there yesterday was Jordan Howard.
Yeah.
Hands down. I think he was terrific.
And a very, John Fox doesn't tell us a lot, as you know, but, you know, he said that Howard was outstanding and we're going to ride him a little bit going forward. So that's significant. You know, I always thought, and I think I told you guys this in training camp, that Howard had the highest upside among all the Bears running backs. I didn't know that it would come together this quickly. And frankly, it's because of the injuries that they had to throw him out there as early as they did. But I think they found something here. You know, 111 yards on 23 carries. It's a good average. You could really see him fight for yards yesterday when there really wasn't anything there, which is something that I think Jeremy Langford was struggling with in the first three games. So good sign here for the Bears. You want to have a quarterback controversy. I think the running back controversy, there's much more of a case to make Jordan Howard the starter over Jeremy Langford than there is Brian Hoyer over Jay Cutler.
So where do they go from here this week? Because, you know, I think sitting back and partying because the Lions beat themselves and you helped a little probably isn't the way to go. So John Fox been around a bit. He knows what he saw on the field. He saw the same thing we saw. How does he keep the players from understanding who they are as opposed to who they think they are?
Well, I think it's a step forward. Let's look at offense first. A step forward that they were able to move the ball efficiently at times and score enough points to win a football game. They still only scored 17 points, though, on a bad Lions defense. That was a little concerning to me. Just when you step back and look at it as a whole, I thought they left some points out there. There were some really bad penalties on third down that cost them on both sides of the football. So there's still plenty to clean up. I think it was a good sign that a lot of young players on defense showed up. They activated John Timu off the practice squad. He made a really nice play at the goal line, the linebacker John Timu, who you saw a little bit last year too. But really these young guys, Jacoby Glenn and DeAndre Hall, I don't know why DeAndre Hall doesn't play more. I think he has such high potential at that cornerback position, and they finally throw him out there late in the game, and what does he do? He gets an interception right away. Now, granted, Matt Stafford threw the ball right to him, but still, guys around the football, that's a good sign.
So well, you got to catch it.
You're right, and there's things to build on, and you look back at the Bears' secondary the last three or four years, they weren't catching those balls. They were dropping interceptions.
Right.
So it's still a positive that those young guys made those plays.
And late special teams touchdown, any concerns there?
Well, yeah, I think in general the biggest negative of that game yesterday was the special teams. Really in all phases, I didn't think Eddie Royal did a good job returning punts. He was running sideways too much instead of north-south. Connor Barth misses another field goal. Granted, it was 50 yards, but still, you know, Robbie Gould was 7-9 from 50-plus last year, and that was actually one of his strengths. And so they bring Connor Barth in because he's automatic underneath under 40, but he missed one under 40 already this year, and now he missed a 50-yarder. So that's a little concerning, something to watch going forward. And
especially when the weather gets bad.
Yeah, because this is still when it's nice.
Right.
And I'm trying to think, was that first miss was in Houston? In a dome,
right?
Where you're kicking on a perfect surface in perfect condition. So
why has Robbie Gould not got a job yet?
I think part of that is him. From what I understand, I think he had some immediate offers after the Bears cut him, and they were with teams that he didn't necessarily want to go to. I think he wants to be on a winning football team. What's interesting is that, look, the Bears aren't going to – I don't think they're going to work out kickers this week or panic too much here with Connor Barth. But if they were to go out and look for another kicker, who is the best kicker available right now? It's Robbie Gould.
Right. Well, maybe they can make him an offer.
Yeah, I just... egos in the NFL. That would be a lot to say, oh, we made a mistake. Let's bring you back. And for Robbie Gould to say, okay, I'll come back.
I'm told it's all about winning.
You can't give up that punt return at the end of the game. That was bad, too. Bears got a lot to clean up on special teams. Not a good performance.
It's Adam Hogue writing where?
WGNradio.com. I got a little bit more context on the whole Brian Hoyer situation and why Jay still needs to be the starter.
By the way, I haven't seen a good onside kick in years. You know, why is it that because you practice it every week.
Well,
you don't practice it a lot, but you practice it every week. Why is it on an onside kick that these kickers kick it 6 yards and then everybody's amazed that flags are out? It's got to go 10. And then let the rugby scrum get underway.
You're right. There's either always a flag for offsides or they don't kick the ball 10 yards, which...
Yeah, I don't get it.
And they come up with different techniques, too. I mean, you were a kicker, Steve, of great renown.
One of the great kickers.
Yeah, and you know, they for a while it was fashionable, like kick it into the turf, have it then bounce high 10 yards and see what happens. You know, I mean, they've tried different things. And
you know, one of the most effective onside kicks I ever saw was, and that guy did it all the time, whose name, of course, wouldn't pop in my head now if I needed it, but you place a ball flat on the ground, you hit it as hard as you can at somebody 10 yards away.
Right.
And 9 times out of 10, they're not going to catch it. And your fastest guys go for the ball because they know where the kicker's going to get it, and game on.
I think I saw a kick a couple years ago where the kicker accidentally hit a line drive straight into the up back, and the ball bounced back towards his own team, and they got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That
was an accident, though.
Kick it at somebody. Hey, don't let try me to get cute.
Can I give John Fox credit, too, for a timeout?
No, I'm sorry. We're not taking that. Yes, go ahead.
He called timeout right before that onside kick.
Yeah.
He iced the kicker on onside kick, and it actually worked. Because from a strategic standpoint, the Bears saw what the Lions were doing, and the Lions actually went back to the sideline and had to change the onside kick they were going to call. And I think that contributed to why it didn't even go 10 yards. Yeah. I think the kicker was kind of thrown off.
I'm not sure what they did different. I mean, it was the same formation, right? And they kicked it.
Well, he faked it to the right first, and then he came back to the left. That might have been the only thing they changed, but that makes it a lot harder than to kick the ball you want to kick.
He was not happy.
Yeah. So, hey, John Fox did something.
Whole thing was a hot mess. Yeah. Good for you, Coach. All right, thanks, buddy.
All right, thank you.
That's Adam Hoge, 629, brought to you by...
Adam Hoge, sponsored by C.J. Wilson Mazda, now serving you in Countryside, Orland Park, and Lake Villa, online at ZoomZoomNation.com.
I have edema on my thigh, pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now.
Dr. Kevin Mose joins me, 643. Good morning, buddy.
Good morning, Steve. How are you doing?
Doing fine, and thank you for the hospitality. I'm just back from a few days off, and I was in Pinehurst, North Carolina. My two hosts, Dr. Kevin Most and the great Peter DeYoung, and the great few days. Lots of rain, but they're in the Sandhills, where Doc Most is a land baron. I can't believe how great the drainage is. I mean, we had 5 or 6 inches of rain in 3 days, and there was a puddle here and there. It was amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. It is. It drains so well and dries out pretty quickly. And how cool that you're there, though, the week of the Ryder Cup. I mean. Yeah.
And they're doing a Ryder Cup wager, which obviously they won, thanks to the USA, which means the flag from Pinehurst number 2, the legendary Pinehurst number 2, which, of course, brought me to my knees. That flag flies today at the Old Course in St. Andrews.
Oh, how cool is that? Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah, it's a cool little wager. So hi to Alex, the media relations manager there as well, who we played with. He's got a good game. And they win the wager. And thanks to Peter DeYoung. Thanks to you. Had a great time.
No problem. Yeah, Peter's a great guy and a lot of fun to play golf with and knows a lot of people in the golf world, that's for sure.
Knows everybody. He told a great story about the Most brothers. Now, here's the thing you need to know about Dr. Kevin Most. Dr. Kevin Most is blessed to have an incredibly close family of three knucklehead brothers and a lovely sister who does her best to not hang out with the brothers. The four brothers play a lot of golf together. So I hear this story when I'm in Pinehurst. The Peter DeYoung and his wife... they have this lovely friend who's now passed, but she was 90, 92, 93 years old. And she is sitting in the DeYoung house when Doc and the boys come over and are all giddy because they just finished playing golf. And as they walk in and sit down, they're all very nice. And by the way, I probably get Doc in trouble with his own mother because I know she listens if she's up listening this morning because I'm sure he didn't tell her this story. But they go in and they say hi to this lovely woman and they sit down and she's very pleasant. And then when there's a pause, she says, "Do you gentlemen ever take your hats off when you come in a house?"
Oh, she called you guys.
Oh, no. No, it was worse than that. She said, "You will take your hats off when you come into a house."
And I'm guessing you haven't gone into a house with your hat on since.
No, I'll tell you, that comes off very quickly.
Just love that. Because I know you guys are just trying to charm her and she busted you completely.
Oh, yeah.
Got a lot to talk about, as always, with Dr. Kevin Most, including, is the five-second rule real? Yeah. Food allergies and maybe some new information on leukemia. It's a little collection of things to get to in the medical world. We'll do that in a second. It's 646. It's traffic, and Mary's back with it, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine Impact Every Day. The whole segment is... Dr. Kevin Mullen, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, impact every day. All right, 5-second rule. This story came out a week or so ago, but we didn't have time to talk about it. And, Doc, the 5-second rule, which, of course, everybody knows, if you drop a steak on the floor, you got 5 seconds to pick it up, cut it up, and eat it. Is the 5-second rule real? Is it a thing?
It's actually false. And didn't you always think of it? It's that last cookie or it's that last piece of bread or whatever that always fits there. But no, Rutgers actually took 2 years to study this. Okay, how about that?
Okay. Yeah. You got the grant. Let's not push it. 2 years?
2 years. And 2 years, they tested numerous surfaces and numerous kind of foods, and they found that it's totally false. Bacteria can attach to food in less than a second in many cases when it hits the floor.
All right, so this is the two things that logically should impact this, right? And that is the stickiness of the food that you drop or the moisture in the food.
Absolutely. That's probably the big thing. The moisture in the food is the big thing, and then what it's landing on. Is it landing on tile? Is it landing on carpeting? What's it landing on? So if the food's very moist, it's going to attract bacteria much quicker. And we're still talking about less than a second or a second. So forget about the 5 seconds. Unless you catch it before it hits the ground, it's going to have bacteria on it.
Throw it away. Why would you want to eat something off the floor anyway?
Well, it's the last cookie.
Oh, it's good for you. Deal
no,
with
it's
it.
Awful.
It's how you build up your immunity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what they say.
Before we get to food allergies, you had a thought for Doc?
I do. So along that note, I know a lot of people, and I was guilty of this too for a while too, Doc. I'm a bit of a germaphobe though, but refilling your water bottle. You have your plastic water bottle that you, whatever it is, Aquafina or, you know, pick a water, Evian, and then you keep refilling it and refilling it and refilling it. Same for when you take the take-home containers home, the plastic ones, and you keep reusing those. Bad idea?
No, not really. I mean, any bacteria that's there is bacteria from you, bacteria from your mouth. You know, if you had your choice between getting bitten by a dog or bitten by a human, you want to get bitten by a dog. Humans have a lot more bacteria in their mouth than dogs do. So any of the bacteria in your water bottle that you're refilling is actually coming from yourself. So unless you drop it, unless you, you know, put it somewhere where bacteria is going to get on it, any bacteria in there is from you.
So you're recycling your own nastiness.
Exactly.
Okay.
I feel so much better now.
Yeah. By the way, and I know people driving to work now have this problem. There's always one crazed germaphobe at work. And in this case, let's see, Dave, it's Andrea.
If
every morning she comes in, she wipes this place down like they're going to do surgery. I mean, there is, you know, she goes through, I believe, 1,000 wipes a day of those. What are they?
Just the Clorox wipes?
Yeah, Clorox wipes.
Yeah.
Shouldn't you have some bacteria in your environment? Doesn't the body need some of that? Is this why we have so many allergies?
Absolutely. It's one of the reasons we have allergies, but it's another reason why we have antibiotic resistance. You know, we can't kill all the bacteria, so the stronger ones live and the weaker ones die. But I think Andrea learned it from Spike, so we can't blame Andrea.
Was Spike a clean freak?
Thank you. I'll stop wiping off your
board. I'm asking, was Spike a clean freak?
He wasn't as bad as I was. I'm a bit weirder. I carry a bottle of Purell in my car.
Yeah, Doc, do you know she doesn't like paper money?
No, that's not surprising. Many studies have been done that show how much bacteria are on money that we carry around.
Here's my two bottles that I have in my bag.
Yeah, she's got the whatever those are.
This is the peppermint hand sanitizer, and this is the Bath & Body Works hand sanitizer, if you guys need any.
Yeah, that's great. All right, moving on. Food allergies, since I brought up bacteria and resistance and all of those things. You know, when you and I were a kid, Doc, way back in a decade we called the 70s, there wasn't a whole lot of kids running around that couldn't get near peanut butter and things of that nature. Now, I'm sure it existed and we didn't know what we know now. But having said that, why are things like that so much worse now?
Yeah, you know, you hit it right on the head there. It's very interesting. Food allergies have risen 50% since 1997 to 2011. And when we stopped and think about it, why? So this group looked at all these studies on food allergies. There were 16,000 studies, and they pared it down to 150. And actually, they came up with some interesting things that make a ton of sense and probably will really make a big impact. What they found is that we, as humans and parents and doctors, said to adults and to parents, don't expose your child to peanut butter because there's a chance of peanut butter allergy. So wait a while before you do that. Don't expose them early in their life. Expose them later. And what happened is it's actually the reverse of that. Peanut butter should be exposed to a child earlier in life rather than later in life, and it decreases their chance of an allergy by 70%.
So as a child's ecosystem is developing out of the womb in the first few months of life, exposure to this stuff is not only important, it sounds like it's necessary.
It certainly is going to decrease our chance of a peanut allergy. If you have that child who's just starting to eat whole or solid foods, so somewhere between the age of 4 months and 11 months, if you introduce peanut butter to that at that age, you reduce the risk of an allergy by 70%. If you wait, the chance of the allergy just skyrockets. And that's probably what has happened. We had this, you know, boy, a couple of people are allergic to peanut butter. Okay, let's hold off. Let's wait a while. And in fact, it's just the opposite.
So the parents, out of love and concern and worry, are actually making their own situations worse.
Potentially. It may be the pediatricians. It may be, you know, the food people. We have to figure out what the message is going to be. So this study just came out last week. So this is going to be something that we are going to be looking at. You're going to have a lot of pediatricians looking at it and giving recommendations to parents. You're going to have a lot of food people. You're going to have all of the allergists as well saying, hold on, let me make sure this is right before we start running down this road. But looking at the breadth of the studies, it certainly looks like that. And it was followed up by something in North Carolina that's very interesting as well, showing that if you have this child early in life that you've identified that has a peanut allergy, we can actually give something called oral immunotherapy, where we start to give them just a little bit of peanut butter or peanut protein every day, and it builds up their immunity, similar to allergy shots. And again, that can even decrease the amount of allergy or kids with allergy dramatically.
We don't have time to go any deeper on it, but lactose intolerance, things of that nature, is that in the same category or is that different?
Probably different. Lactose intolerance, more about the bacteria in our stomach and how we break down lactose. So that's probably different than the allergy, unless we find that there's a component there where there's an immune response to the bacteria in our gut. But that's a little bit deeper science than you want to go into.
There is something there, though, with IBS, right? Because kids, you know, you'd be like goats when you're kids. You could eat anything.
Yeah. Well, there's a huge difference between IBS and lactose intolerance. So,
it's a different category?
Absolutely, yep. Okay. Lactose intolerance can actually be treated fairly easily, where irritable bowel syndrome is a little bit more difficult.
But doesn't it seem like there's a lot of that, too?
Absolutely, a lot. And who knows, you know, people there are saying, well, we have so many processed foods now that we didn't have. Irritable bowel syndrome is somebody who, you know, doesn't want these chemicals in their body. Their body has been figuring that out. There's a whole slew of concepts and ideas of what's causing IBS and what we're going to do about it.
All right, based on all of this, what condition do you think Trump and Hillary have? All right, you can get back to me on that. Probably not a medical thing.
Sorry I missed the flu shots too, you guys.
Yeah,
next year for sure.
Here's the good news. I talked to Doc and he was very busy. He will be coming in probably as soon as a week or two.
What?
Yes.
Yeah. Isn't that true, Doc?
Excellent. We just talked about flu shots. We didn't give
flu
shots.
Oh, yeah. We didn't get them, Andre.
No.
Here and I missed it.
No.
Andre,
no.
You just got a tetanus shot, so you should be
ready for this. So I don't need the flu.
You should be ready for this.
Tetanus doesn't cover the flu. It's coming us before 7.
Sorry,
Doc, thank you again, and thanks to Peter DeYoung and everybody at Pinehurst and my new pal Alex. Everybody was great and couldn't happen without you. I appreciate a few days of hospitality on your behalf.
You got it. Take care. Have a good week.
All right. See you later. It's a minute before 7. So I'm done. I got the tetanus shot. Back with more in a moment on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
That's Paul Coit's favorite song, especially after a Ryder Cup loss.
I'm talking about America. Sweet America. You know, God done shed his grace on thee.
It was great seeing Rory sing this.
Yes, he did.
Had the sunglasses on, played the piano himself, bobbing his head back and forth.
From sea to
that's right. We're 3-for-11, but we'll take it. United States 17-11 winners in the Ryder Cup and some very exciting Ryder Cup action over the weekend. And Paul Coit joins us live from London. Good morning, buddy.
Good morning. I'm bitter and twisted. How are you?
Congratulations to us.
Congratulations to you. Absolutely. You know, Your players were great. Your crowds were scary. I mean, the Hazeltine crowd.
You know,
keep me away from Minnesota, for crying out loud.
Yeah, I mean, you spent some time in Minnesota with me, as a matter of fact. And having lived up there for five great years, I never saw that kind of hooliganism.
Where did you buy them in? I mean, where did you get them from? I mean, we could use them for Spurs soccer games over here. I mean, they're unbelievable.
I thought a lot of them may have been soccer thugs from Europe.
Oh, really? I think it probably could be. Well, the accents were bad, you see. The singing of the USA. USA. I mean,
yeah,
that's the life out of us. I'm sorry, it really does. You see, we try the Europe, sorry, and it just doesn't really quite work the same way.
One of my favorite things, though, about the Ryder Cup this weekend, aside from the obvious part of the win, was the fact that a lot of people who aren't normally into golf or won't watch golf found it very exciting. Now, what we need to do, and I think you might agree with this, but Paul's a golf fan.
Sure.
Andrea plays a ton of golf. Dave plays a ton of golf. Mm-hmm. But Mary, for instance, Mary's not a golf fan. And I think a way to excite people for golf would be to take some of the aspects of the Ryder Cup and maybe bring it forward for at least one event a year, like possibly full contact golf. You know, you and your opponent both tee off at the same time. You run to the best shot in the fairway. Whoever gets there first hits. And if they get there just ahead of you, you can tackle them.
Oh, I like that.
I would watch that, definitely.
Right?
Pretty fun.
Because actual exercise is involved.
Don't start.
All right. Now.
Don't start. But don't you think, Paul, don't you think that would make it fun for people?
Well, funny enough, I did try that, but I've got these. The thing is, the golf trousers that we wear over here. What would you call them? Golf pants, wouldn't you?
Yeah,
or
pants.
Or
that's right.
What would you call the trousers?
Well, we can call them slacks. It'd be pants.
Golf slacks. And the thing is, I found that the man-made material that most of these golf slacks are made out of.
Uh-huh.
If you run for more than about 10 to 15 yards, you can actually make fire. So I think that's probably going to be a pretty bad idea. Have you tried running in those things, or do you just like a leisurely walk? They're bad.
Yeah,
maybe
so
it's because I've got cheap ones.
Right, so the thighs smacking together can actually spark a fire. I understand what you're saying. I understand.
Actually, good. You've got to be very enduring, and it's not safe if there's woodland on the golf course. You have to be very, very careful. So, you know, I like the idea. I think Caddyshack had it right all those years ago. You know, the shouting, because I think there's actually... there is a discipline of Caddyshack golf, isn't there, really, where you can shout and scream, miss it, standing, you can do anything apart from touch the opponent. Isn't that right?
Yeah,
so
I think
that
yeah.
should actually seriously go forward.
Yeah, well, and again, maybe not for every tournament, but at least one event a year. But congratulations again to us.
Mm-hmm. Many, many congratulations. It was well deserved. You wait for 2 years where we get, oh, no, it's going to be in France. That's not going to help us much. Oh, well, maybe, whatever. But whenever we play you again, maybe when we get it back in this country, when we feel like it.
Then again,
we're out of Europe, so that means we may not be in it anymore. So many problems.
That's right.
That's true.
Do? Brexit.
Yeah. That's a good point. Once Brexit happens, maybe you can't even play.
Yeah, probably won't be able to play anymore. It's just going to be, you know, oh, goodness me. I just don't know. Where would Rory McIlroy? You know, he'd be all right because he's Northern Irish, which makes it British, so then he wouldn't be able to play. But
I'm sure they'll make some sort of adjustment to rules. You know, one of the best players was in the Euros was this rookie who played at the University of Illinois.
Yes, he was awesome.
The Wieters?
Wieters. Yeah.
Was it Wieters?
So you're saying he's yours as well. Is that what you're trying to say?
Peters.
Yeah.
Peters.
Yeah. He was really good. He's ours too. Not yours.
Yeah. Oh, no. We're taking credit for him.
He's
just lent him back to you.
Yeah.
You mentioned the Spurs. Do you have a title with the Spurs now?
No, I still don't have a title. No, guy with microphone.
Okay.
Is it? Still, that's what they call me. Yeah.
Paul does.
It's going to be general manager soon.
Paul's essentially the MC for everything related to the Tottenham Hotspur Football Club soccer team, one of the greats of all time. Finished second last year in the Premier League to just a ridiculous run by a team that never should have actually won the cup. But having said all of that, how are the Spurs this year?
They are doing very, very well. The most expensive team in the world, they played yesterday and won 2-0 or 2-0.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll get it. And they were magnificent. And currently second, 1 point off the top. It's looking very, very exciting.
And so, how many games in the season so far? Just three or four, right?
There's seven played.
Oh, seven played.
Like 34 or so, 33. Got a long way to go.
Yeah.
But it's all looking very positive and very exciting.
And can't help but notice that Prince Wills and Princess Kate are running around the world. You don't travel a lot with the kids. Is there trouble at home?
Yeah, I think there probably is. It's a Brexit thing. It's pretty much looking for a new country to rule. So I don't want to put too much in there, but, you know, we're just trying out a few things at the moment. Canada, seem possible, but not really too sure. But yeah, maybe trying some Australia or maybe somewhere in Africa coming up over the next few weeks.
I know we'll talk to Dean Richards about this after A, but as I go off the checklist here of things that I needed to run by Paul, Kim Kardashian was held at gunpoint in a Paris hotel over the weekend, and millions of dollars worth of jewelry and cash and other things was stolen. You're closer than we are to Paris. Can you see anything from there?
Can't really see anything, but I really never really know if you steal a bracelet which is worth about $1 million, how then you're going to sell it on, really. You know, I don't think they really think about it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good point.
If you take something, a couple of hundred, you know, you might be able to sell it to a friend. But if you're going to say, look, I've got this, or it's, and how much is it? It's going to be 7 million francs or whatever they use there. It's never really going to pass. It's probably a mistake. So very silly. Yes.
What's weirder is that they said initially $10 million worth of jewelry was taken. And I thought Kanye was broke because remember he set up that GoFundMe page? Because he was broke, poor thing.
Yeah, well, and he dropped a concert in New York when he got a panicked call from his wife. Because who amongst us hasn't gotten a call from our wife who was being held at gunpoint in a hotel after millions of dollars of jewelry was stolen? We had to leave work. I mean, we've all had that.
Aside from Liam Neeson, right?
We've all had that happen.
So hold on, did she call? She called while she was being held at gunpoint, and she picked up the phone and gave her the call.
Yes.
At the same time.
Yeah, I believe that's...
In a very calm, relaxed voice.
I believe that's...
Kanye!
Hi! Hi, I'm being held at gunpoint in Paris.
Come along with $10 million.
All right, final question. Since Trump is still in this race, and if Trump wins, I will be kicked out of the country, is my heckling of your team related to the Ryder Cup, does this affect my standing at all to move back to London?
No, because I don't think you heckle too much. I think you were very respectful, and I appreciate that. All you got to do is, I always say, throw out a few apologies for absolutely no reason whatsoever, and you'll be in. I've got a little spare room waiting for you. You apologize for that, and you're welcome anytime, my friend.
So sorry.
Come and join us come November. Sorry. We'll be waiting for you. What a lovely Christmas you'll have here.
It's the great Paul Coit, Tottenham Hotspurs. What's the website for Tottenham?
It would be Tottenham Hotspur, Tottenham Hotspur dot.
Common spelling.
Thanks for doing it in an American accent. It's
you know, because otherwise it wouldn't make sense. It's crazy language. I can't help myself.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you right now, it didn't make a lot of sense. 7:21. We're back with other stuff in a moment. And Hamp too on the Bears. We don't know what to do with Hamp on a Monday after a Bears win. We're out of practice.
There's a set going strong, a lot of things going on. The man of the hour has an air.
7:26 now. The dudes have been in case you missed it from the weekend. Well, let me start with this. I wrote a blog and I am rescinding. I'm taking back, because I'm not sure that Gary Johnson knows what rescinding means. I'm taking back my endorsement of Johnson & Weld.
All right. So when you were gone last week, obviously he couldn't name the world leader. The Tribune endorsed him. You saw that.
I did, but the not naming the world leader to me was the third strike, because prior to that, he didn't know what Aleppo was. Mm-hmm. And between that and Aleppo, we had 2 terrorist acts in 1 weekend. 9 people stabbed in Minneapolis. By the way, 6 people were shot in Minneapolis this morning in 2 separate shootings in downtown Minneapolis, like right at 4th and Hennepin, for people that know Minneapolis. I mean, that's be like shooting on Michigan Avenue.
Yeah.
So 9 people were stabbed in Minneapolis. The 2 bombs that went off from the terrorist in Jersey and New York. The next morning, Gary Johnson's on CNN, and he says, thank God no one was injured.
Oh,
okay, so you got to know where Aleppo is. Mm-hmm. You got to know why Syria is a problem, and you have to have a plan for it. Secondarily, if there's a major news story that's being covered 24/7 for 24 hours, you have to know what that story is. And as you said last week on Hardball, Chris Matthews, that blowhard, kept asking him, name one world leader you admire. He couldn't name a world leader until William Weld bailed him out and threw in the next president of Mexico. So because of that, I've taken back my endorsement of Gary Johnson, because I don't believe, if you don't care enough to do the homework, that you really don't want the job on some level.
Agreed.
Now, if they'd flip the ticket and had Weld on top, you know, I'd be willing to go for those guys.
Too bad you didn't write your blog before the Tribune editorial board made their endorsement.
Yes, because they do listen to me, mm-hmm. as you know.
Right.
It's not to say Weld Johnson, Johnson Weld aren't qualified, because on paper they are. But my concern, again, is that Johnson isn't even connected. This is, you know, Cheech and Chong called and said, get off the weed for 10 minutes. Because, I mean, get your head clear. So having said all of that, Weld actually didn't help his little partner so much this weekend when he said this.
You know, I think he's got a very appealing policy mix. The number one issue would be fiscal policy. Gary and I both balanced our budgets and moved our states in more conservative fiscal directions. The voters at the end of the day do appreciate responsible fiscal stewardship.
Do you believe he's more qualified to be president than Hillary Clinton?
I'm not sure anybody's more qualified than Hillary Clinton to be president of the United States. I mean, that's not the end of the inquiry, though. We were two-term governors, and I think Gary is very, very solid.
Solid.
Okay. I'm sorry, wait, did he just endorse Hillary Clinton?
Solid.
I missed that.
Every girl wants to be called solid. At 7:28, I rarely hype Saturday Night Live anymore because, frankly, it's rarely funny. But it was funny almost end-to-end Saturday night with Alec Baldwin as Donald Trump and Kate McKinnon just, as always, crushing it as Hillary. Speaking about judgment and who had better judgment to be the president, let's listen in as they discuss.
The Iraq war is all about judgment. Secretary Clinton, do you think you have better judgment than Mr. Trump?
Yes. Of course I do. Donald Trump has terrible judgment. He makes bad decisions. He's spent his life cheating middle-class laborers. Laborers like my own human father, who made, I guess, drapes or printed drapes or sold drapes or something with drapes, and he was relatable, and I am also relatable.
Mr. Trump, same question. Why is your judgment better than Secretary Clinton's?
Because it is. I have the best judgment and the best temperament. She's the one with the bad temperament. She's always screaming. She's constantly lying. Her hair is crazy. Her face is completely orange, except around the eyes where it's white. And when she stops talking, her mouth looks like a tiny little butthole.
Secretary Clinton, you have 2 minutes to respond.
Oh, that's okay. He can have my chair.
Now, last week, Donald Trump, because Donald Trump can't let anything go. And again, just take a breath. If you're supporting Donald Trump, just take a breath and consider he's president of the United States with all the power, authority, and responsibility that come with that office. And someone offends him, and he spends 5 days tweeting at them while he's allegedly running the country. You think that behavior is going to change if he wins? No. Alicia Machado is a former Miss Universe who Trump called Miss Piggy, an eating machine.
Miss Housekeeping.
And Miss Housekeeping because she's Hispanic. He was tweeting at her all last week, blowing 3 or 4 or 5 more days of the campaign. More from Saturday Night Live with Trump and Hillary.
Well, this has been an illuminating debate, but now it's time for our
final. Alicia Machado.
I'm sorry, what was that? Who is Alicia Machado?
Thank you for bringing that up, Lester. She is a strong, beautiful, political prop that I almost forgot to mention tonight, even though we already made a web video about her. Alicia Machado was Miss Universe in 1996.
Where did you find this?
And Donald Trump called her Miss Piggy.
How do you know this?
And Miss Housekeeping.
That's pretty funny.
Mr. Trump, your response.
Lester, why are we talking about this woman? We should be talking about the important issues like Rosie O'Donnell and how she's a fat loser. And everyone agrees with me, and I just wanted to bring that up in a presidential debate. Right at the end, my own volition, good idea, I did it.
Secretary Clinton, why are you crying?
I'm sorry, Lester, it's... This is going so well. It's going exactly how I'd always dreamed.
Oh, I'm telling you.
Oh, that's
very
fantastic.
Funny. And if you do watch the show or you pull some clips, make sure you see Jeopardy and also Family Feud. Right? Didn't they do both?
They did. Did they do Jeopardy? I think they did
I'm
Family
making
Feud.
Up Jeopardy. They did Family Feud. Yeah.
But
yeah,
that's where Kellyanne Conway said, "Thanks for letting me be on Jeopardy."
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That's where I was.
An animal.
Dan Hampton anchors a young Bears defense.
An animal.
It's time for Dan Hampton.
That's right. It happens only occasionally. It's not like you go to a wedding every weekend, but you go to a wedding, and when this song comes on, the white people get up and dance. There's a lot of white people dancing on Sunday as the Bears beat the Detroit Lions. I flipped over from the Ryder Cup. I went, there's something wrong with my cable. The Bears are leading. And I hung it a game. Good God, Detroit was awful. But you know what, Dan Hampton, you Hall of Famer, you, a win's a win's a win, right? Good point. Hello? Yeah. What's wrong with their phone? Hold on, let me put him back on hold. You want to pick it up, see if you can hear him?
He was dancing.
He was too busy.
You think he was dancing away from the phone?
Mm-hmm.
He is a white guy. Yeah. Tell me if you can hear him on your end, and then we'll come back to him. And it's all sponsored by ChevyDriveChicago.com. Let me try one more time here. Dan Hampton, a Hall of Famer. Good morning, buddy.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. All I can tell you is I'm glad the Bears didn't disturb your weekend plans, but my goodness, they did win a game. And, you know, Steve, I was around this game a long time, and the last thing you want to do is what's the only thing worse than 0-3? 0-4.
Right.
And so knowing that, while you were off having fun on Friday, we were busy talking about this.
Yes.
And I said, you know, nobody wants that kind of a stink on themselves or an organization or a team going 0-4. And I expected, you know, the guys to rally. They played a pretty darn good game. You know, Detroit's not going anywhere. But, hey, you can't win them all if you don't win the first.
And what do you make of Matthew Stafford being just awful? Did the Bears do something defensively, or was he just, you know, up late Saturday night? I mean, I couldn't figure it out.
You know, this is something, it's a phenomenon that we have not had the chance to look at for, I don't know, if ever. While we are, you know, struggling on offense and the defensive line, the front seven is having issues, those kids in the secondary, they're really playing well. And I'm just saying, you know, no quarterback likes trying to fit a ball in every single throw. Oh, unless you're Jay Cutler, of course. But most of the quarterbacks, if you've got some kind of a semblance of coverage, you know, they're gonna go to the next progression. They're gonna skip. They're gonna go. We are covering people up. And the kid that really made it happen was Bryce Callahan, who's missed a couple of games with the concussion protocol. But Golden Tate is the straw that stirs that Detroit offense. And he was shut down. You know, Matt Stafford kept looking at him, and Callahan had him covered. And so then it was the next progression, and we didn't have the greatest pass rush, but it was present. And, you know, we got a couple of sacks. Keem Hicks, we'll talk about him in a second. But he stepped up. He played, you know, he got after it pretty well in the trenches. But the secondary as a whole. And these two kids coming up with picks on errant passes. Now, most of the time in the NFL, and you got to give Ed Donatell, the secondary coach, a lot of credit. Because both of those errant passes that were intercepted, Most DBs would never have seen him. They're so, you know, locked up with the receiver. They're looking at the receiver's hips. They're watching his feet. They're worried about doing their job. They're not looking at the ball and the quarterback throwing the ball and the flight of the ball. But on the first one, Jacoby Glenn, I mean, he just came off of his coverage and made a break on the ball and took it up the right side of the Soldier Field and stopped. You know, if they were driving, it would have been at least a field goal opportunity for them. And then the second one, I think it's DeAndre Hall, the fourth round draft pick. He makes a great break on the ball off the receiver. So like I said, Matt Stafford obviously is a pretty good quarterback. I think he's the third highest paid player in the game. They had the number three offense throwing the football, coming into Soldier Field. But, hey, when the quarterback does not feel comfortable because of coverage, he starts making some bad decisions, and I think that's what we saw yesterday.
Dave Ennett's here. We'll get to Dave right after we get to traffic, and then more with Hamp on yesterday's Bears win. Did you see any Ryder Cup, by the way, Hamp?
I watched a lot of it. And, by the way, when you were talking about the white people dancing to that song, I couldn't help but mentally conjure up a picture of Mr. Cat dancing at some Northwestern function. Could you?
No, here's the thing. You throw on Celebration. Let's say Chicago 6 is playing. Chicago 6 does Celebration or old-time rock and roll. You know what Mr. Cat looks like? He looks like George in that episode of Seinfeld where there was a trash fire and he's running over the kids to leave the room. It's Hall of Famer Dan Hampton after a Bears win. And Hamp and Dave, I was looking at the Detroit Free Press. They did grades on their Detroit Lions. Mm-hmm. The highest grade was a C. Everything else was a D plus, a D minus, or a C minus across the board. And based on what I saw, they may have been grading on the curve.
Yeah, what was that for special teams?
Well, even the special teams they hit. Special teams scored a touchdown late.
Right. Scored their only touchdown.
Yeah, actually, I take that back. They did give the special teams an A minus for the late touchdown.
Okay,
coaching D.
Well, yeah, I mean, Hemp, if you look at the Bears offensively, I thought one thing that was very refreshing was to see the quarterback with lots of time to work back there. Something we haven't seen all that often.
Absolutely. You know, there's really no mystery. The best defensive player for the Detroit Lions didn't play. That was Ziggy Ansah, who gave his fits last year. I think he had two or three sacks against the Bears in the game here. But he and DeAndre Levy, the two best, they didn't play. So, you know, that's a huge plus. The second part was game four for the offensive line. They're starting to come together. You know, everybody goes, oh, well, they need time to kind of hang out, coalesce, get, you know, to know each other and all that stuff. And, well, I guess it does matter because they played their best game. But maybe the biggest reason was Dow Loggins, the offensive coordinator, who we've beat up pretty good on this program, really came up with a pretty good game plan. And it featured running the football. And we all know Jordan Howard went over 100 yards. And most, you know, and there's certain things. You know, first things first, you got to, you know, before you go to work, you got to get up. You got to get ready. Well, you as a defense, you got to stop the run. You got to pay a price to go ahead and get the quarterback in situations where now, hey, we can go get him. Well, they never paid the price. They couldn't stop the run. So we could dictate what we wanted to do on offense. And that means Hoyer had a lot more time, the luxury of not having somebody in his face every play. And, you know, hey, everybody knows that Jay Cutler will be back at some point, but what good fortune to have a pretty smart and steady-heady guy like Hoyer to get us a win. And this next week, it's not going to be, you know, a lot different. The Colts are struggling on defense, and so, you know, our offense should be able to dictate tempo and rhythm the way we did yesterday. But first and foremost, you still got to go out there, pay the price, and get and establish the line of scrimmage. And for the first three games, there was a reason why we didn't win. We got our butts kicked around at the line of scrimmage. Yesterday, we finally won it.
How do you assess that type of game, though? And I'd ask Dave the same question, because when your opponent is so bad and so messed up on two of the three phases of the game, the two most important phases, you know, how do you assess your performance?
Well, you can only play who they put on the field in front of you. And, again, you know, Dallas wasn't, you know, world beaters. They had a rookie quarterback. They had a bunch of guys on defense. You didn't know their names. I mean, if we would have played, you know, you can't go back and say, well, if I would have played like that against this guy, I would have beat him in golf or whatever. Well, you can't go back. You play the way you played, and all you can do is judge your performance by, you know, where you are as far as what you're capable of. Well, we played against the Texans. I'd give us about a 4. We weren't prepared on either side of the ball, especially in the second half. Against Philadelphia, I give us a 2. It was an embarrassment from the opening kickoff on. At Dallas, second half, we got a little something going on offense, but all day long, Dallas dictated the game to us. Yesterday, we flipped the tables. We ran the ball. We controlled the clock. We dictated, you know, tempo. We controlled the line of scrimmage, all that. So, where are we? I don't know. We're going to find out. The Colts, not a great team, but they got a great player. Andrew Luck is a winner. He was down in the fourth quarter over in London yesterday. He comes up with 3 touchdowns, just like on grit. So we're going to have to, you know, hopefully be in a position where we can control the line of scrimmage, get after him. But I got to tell you, you know, as good as it is to win, a couple of things really stuck in my craw. The special teams, as you said, Mr. Cat, we were horrid, giving up the punt return. We almost lost the onside kick. We had a penalty. We missed a field goal. But when the settler of all settlers, John Fox, gets down on the 8-yard line, first and goal, and we never throw it into the end zone, we ran 3 dives and settled for the field goal. Well, guess what? That bothers me because in this league, it's geared up for people to move it up and down the field, and we were really lucky they didn't get the ball on that onside kick because it could have got kind of hairy at the end.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood, you know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood, well, kiss me good.
Live from Channel 9, good morning, Dean.
Welcome back.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks for filling in last week.
Missed you.
Well, missed you as well, but I understand I was not needed. I understand you and Andre and Dave and Justin Kaufman all did a great job.
Totally competent. Really, you could take the next 6 or 8 months off.
No one would even notice.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say that, but since you did.
No, there was a big, like, gaping hole. There was just this void.
Where I normally sit.
Well, yeah, there too.
Listen, I don't want to make light of this because it's a scary deal, but Kim Kardashian being robbed at gunpoint, it's funny until you stop and think about it.
Well, let me just...
Is she okay, little Tommy?
She's going to be... little Kimmy going to be okay? Yeah, she's fine.
All right.
She got on her private jet and left. But let me explain what happened, because it's super dangerous what happened, but... You know, maybe a little preventable also. This is a tip for those of you traveling with $10 million worth of jewelry in...
Who hasn't done that?
...a hotel apartment. Yeah. So she is...
You know what I like to do with my $10 million worth of jewelry? Before I leave, I put it in the drawer under my panties and bras. And that way no one will go in there.
I like to leave mine right on the pillow. So when I go to get the chocolate that they leave later
I remember to put it somewhere safe.
So she is in Paris for Fashion Week with her mother, Kris Jenner.
Yep, me too.
And also 2 of her sisters, Chloe and Kendall? I believe, no, Courtney and Kendall. They're all in
Zippy,
Paris. Only
Groucho,
she,
Zeppo, they're all there.
Only she is staying at this very exclusive, it's an apartment complex, really, where, as is described on the web, where only millionaires and billionaires stay. That's how exclusive it is.
But so this was not a Motel 6.
Not Le Six Motel, as they call it in Paris.
And we shall leave the light on for you.
And anytime we can bring out our French accents, Steve and I are happy to do that. Right. We are men of many tongues.
Oh, very sexy, let me tell you.
You betcha. So anywho, she's staying here. The sisters and the moms are staying at a regular old hotel that have regular old hotel type security.
Oh, so gauche.
Five masked guys show up at this hotel apartment complex where there's minimal security. They overtake the security guy, and they force them to open her apartment where she is staying. They tie her up. They gag her, which really the world has been trying to do, the gagging part. Most of the world is saying, not so hot on the robbery, but the gagging part we're all with.
Hi, what are you guys doing here?
So they tie her up, they gag her, they throw her in the bathroom, and then they ransack the apartment where she's staying, where she has got $6 million worth of jewels, a $4 million diamond ring. They also made off with 1,000 euros, her purse, and two cell phones. And she,
Think of the numbers in that cell phone, just of the people she slept with.
Right? Right. Well, okay, allegedly, yeah, sure, yeah, sure. She's okay. She's just shaken up. In the meantime, Kanye West Kardashian is doing a concert in New York while all this is going on. He gets word of it while he's on stage and abruptly stops the show. There's tape of him saying, family emergency, I have to end the show. And he just walks off the stage, I guess.
He's still at LaGuardia waiting for a flight.
Well, he didn't go to Paris because Kim, Chris, Courtney, and Kendall all were given a police escort directly to the airport after the this thing took place, hopped on a private jet. They are headed back to the United States.
So the French took their statement and go, we cannot make head nor tail of this. We will call you right after our investigation is complete.
Oh, le Pepe Le Pew, we love to have you in our country, but we will give you police escort.
We have our best people on top of this, much like many have been on top of you.
Well, we are giving you police escort. Please enjoy this complimentary French toast.
Nobody's more amused at this segment than you and I.
We are international ambassadors. That's what we are.
I'm just glad she's okay. That's scary stuff.
She's fine. It actually is very scary to think that you're in basically a hotel room.
Right.
I mean, this is, it's when you look at this building, it just looks like a building on the street. There's no lobby.
Who's there? It's late.
Le Candy Graham.
It's Kanye. Kanye for you. Hi, baby. Hold on.
Let me take something off and open the door.
If it was anybody but her, it wouldn't be this funny.
Yeah, no, it's not funny. It's but not would funny be the key word there in that sentence,
right,
by the way.
Yeah, don't even bring
it.
Sorry.
No, it's
sorry,
not funny. Dean. Not funny at all. Well, we're glad she's okay. She's now, what'll fine happen to the $10 million in jewels? How will we fence them?
That's a lot of jewels.
I'd like to sell them on the street.
Oh, excuse me, average American tourist walking down the street. Would you care for some croissants and a $6 million ring?
More on Angelina and Brad coming up. Lindsay Lohan chopped off one of her fingers. You know, I saw some pictures of her. Man, she was fall down beautiful. She just had, after, what was the first movie she did when she was a kid?
The Parent Trap, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She was great in that.
Mean Girl.
She's a good actress. She's a good actress.
Yeah. She could have been so good. John Legend is welcome to the Tribune Company. We'll talk about that. Lady Gaga, as we say in Paris, is in the news. And how good was SNL Saturday night when it comes to ratings?
Oh, hilarious. Yeah. Hilarious. Great ratings. Hilariously funny highlights. Coming up for you Americans.
In momento. Oh, well, now we're in Madrid. It's 8:20.
Coming up in a minute.
Gosh, you're so fluent.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel 972.
It is 8:25, back to Dean at Channel 9. So, you remember when, and I don't know if President Obama came up with a line, but he said about Rahm Emanuel who had the top joint of his middle finger cut off. This really inhibited his ability to communicate. do we know which finger Lindsay Lohan chopped off this weekend?
Appears to be her index finger.
Ah. What happened?
Not the Rahm Emanuel finger.
Was she working at Arby's?
She was not working at Arby's. She was on a boat. She was pulling up the anchor.
No, she wasn't.
That's what the story says, that she was boating. She was pulling up the boat's anchor, and her finger got caught, actually pulled her into the water, And actually, according to her message on social media, because that's what you do after you lose a piece of your finger, you get right on social media.
I hope it doesn't affect my hits on my robbery.
It's harder for me to tweet now because I don't have my fingers.
Totally. I've only got 9 fingers.
This is like listening to the Rich Little Show today, isn't it?
I was going to say, what would Lindsay say to Kim?
Kim, it's Lindsay. No, wait, I'm Kim. You're Lindsay. Lindsay, it's Kim.
Miss Kardashian, we must get you to the airport immediately.
Lindsay, could you not tweet till all this has calmed down over my jewelry robbery?
So Lindsay falls off the boat. Her finger gets caught in the whatever it was, I guess maybe a chain holding the anchor, and she literally lost half of her index finger.
Wow.
Of course, she has to post a picture of it, because who doesn't want to see that mangled mess?
And at what point did armed robbers break in and take her finger?
She had surgery. I know that your next question was going to be, is she okay?
Yeah.
The answer is
yes.
She
okay, little tummy?
They actually found the piece of finger in the water.
Oh, great. Yeah.
I didn't know finger floated.
Even
but
the sharks turned it down.
Oh, that's hilarious.
They had surgery. They reattached. So now the picture is, a bandaged up finger. But she's, Steve, relax. Relax, Steve, relax. She's going to be okay.
An anxious nation waits for constant updates. Angelina and Brad working on something for the kids.
They had, over the weekend, Friday, actually, they hammered out what is described as a temporary custody deal.
Yeah, there won't be any hammering between those two anymore.
It's the only hammering that's going to be going on.
Yeah.
They came to a temporary custody agreement until all the legalities are worked out. This actually sounds like it's being done fairly cooperatively, but they came to an agreement where there will be individual and family therapy that's going on. There will be monitored visitation by Brad Pitt to his children, but also it must include random drug and alcohol testing for Pitt to make sure that he's okay when he does visit the children. She's
serious about the weed thing, huh? The weed and the booze.
She apparently feels it's an important deal. But so there's in the next 3 weeks, all of this will be reevaluated again. This is just a temporary custody deal until the Los Angeles County Department of Children and Family Services there. Issues their final determination of what should be and what's safe and what's not safe. But he's agreed to everything. He's said no problem with the random drug and alcohol testing. It's not crazy about having to be monitored by a therapist when he is in visitation with his kids, but he's going along with everything right now.
Yeah, and I mentioned this on stage a week ago, but because Brad Pitt blew up his marriage to Jennifer Aniston, and apparently has blown up his marriage to Angelina Jolie, he's got to go to the back of the line now. Back of the line.
Yeah,
back
make,
of the line.
You got to make some room for normal-looking people.
Yeah, Caitlyn Jenner. Caitlyn Jenner, which brings it full. And why is my dad dating Brad Pitt? Hi.
Daddy.
John Legend, welcome to Tribune Media. What's he doing for us?
I can't wait to see him at the Christmas party this
year. Be great. I hope he buys a gift.
That's going to be nice. He is, well, he's already executive producer of our national cable channel, WGN America's slave drama that's called Underground, actually doing really well in the ratings, by the way. But he has just announced that he is going to be doing some on-camera appearances for them in season 2, which starts in February. He will play abolitionist and anti-slave author and orator Frederick Douglass. Now, that should be
should be very interesting.
He also announced that he's going to be developing another series for WGN America. Steve, our company is going to be rolling in the dough.
Yeah, and they will spread it equally amongst all of us.
Everybody gets an equal share. He's going to be developing another series about Black Wall Street for Tribune Media.
I could tell it was a big Monday. Pardon me. I could tell it was a big Monday because Larry Wirt walked by with a 6-foot cigar. Yeah, he had a guy carrying it for him.
Lighting it with a $50 bill.
And what's going on with Lady Gaga?
Lady Gaga has announced that she's got a new album that's coming out on the 21st, but she's going to release the first song from it in a different way. She's going to be releasing it this coming Wednesday on Facebook Live. Because that's what all the kids are doing now.
Sure.
Everyone's doing the Facebook Live.
Did she ever get confirmed for the Super Bowl? Or?
She is confirmed for the Super Bowl. That did happen while you were away.
All right.
And she's going to be doing a little mini tour, not big arenas, but little small dive bars I'd be shocked if she didn't come to Chicago. Although, now that I think of it, maybe she won't be coming here because she was in Chicago all the time because of former fiancé Taylor Kinney. Maybe a little too close to that whole thing for her to come back to
Chicago.
Well,
she is booked at the Billy Goat. She's working the Billy Goat.
That would fall under dive bar category.
All right, so give me one clip from Saturday Night Live.
It's just the ratings, by the way, their highest season debut ratings from 2008. A little bit of the mock debate. Alec Baldwin, Kate McKenna as the candidates. Here we go.
Secretary Clinton, do you think you have better judgment than Mr. Trump?
Yes. Of course I do. Donald Trump has terrible judgment. He makes bad decisions. He's spent his life cheating middle-class laborers. Laborers like my own human father, who made, I guess, drapes or printed drapes or sold drapes or something with drapes, and he was relatable, and I am also relatable.
Our jobs are fleeing this country. They're going to Mexico. They're going to China. I will stop that. If Hillary knew how, she would have done it already, period. End of story. I won the debate. I stayed calm, just like I promised, and it is over. Good night, Hofstra.
Donald, there's still 88 minutes left. It's a 90-minute debate.
My microphone is broken.
So good. Really well funny. Done.
That was hilarious, and they did a political family feud with friends of Trump and Hillary. Also hilariously funny, featuring a shirtless Vladimir Putin as one of the contestants.
It all worked.
Yep.
Thanks, buddy.
Bye.
8:32, big story next, 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Come on, white people, dance with me. Hey, give me a little bit of this. See, we got Dave bobbing his head.
Get the move.
You want to stretch before you bob that head that much. Did you give me a little Prince there? Did you give me a little bit of
that's a little for that toosie.
8:42, well, Steve Cochran Show continues. Big political story this morning is Donald Trump's tax returns. No, he has not released them. Or there was a leak from the Trump Tower, allegedly. A reporter at the New York Times got an envelope marked with a Trump Tower return address. In that envelope was a financial document for New York State tax returns indicating information related to 1995 or 6. You go back to the middle 90s, Trump had a bad year. Really bad year.
1995.
Lost $951 million because of the tax laws being cuckoo in this country. And really, the tax laws were designed so that you would not lose your entire business if you suffered a particularly bad year. However, at its max point, it apparently allows you to take the previous 3 years and 15 years going forward where you can apply those losses to future taxation, which means that, as other people have run the math, trust me, this is not me, but Trump could have made up to $50 million in income in each of those years and not paid a dime in taxes, which means he may not have paid taxes for 18 years.
Right.
So if you're going to be the candidate of the people, the candidate of the people who says, I am one who understands you, I care about you, I'm going to fix everything, I'm going to make sure that the military is stronger than ever, I'm going to find more jobs. Here's a bulletin. Can't do it without money. Where's the money come from? Comes from taxes. So if the rich people aren't paying their taxes, well, that's going to make a dent. It doesn't make all the difference in the world, but it certainly hurts. And are you not offended as a regular working stiff who does your part and pays your taxes that the rich guy who says he's your candidate isn't paying any? That's one argument. The alternative argument is that Donald Trump did nothing illegal and that he is maxing his ability to get around the tax laws, the ultimate loopholes that exist. I mean, I made this argument in regards to Mitt Romney in 2012. Mm-hmm. Fix the tax code. You know, if rich folks are exploiting the tax code, it's because they can. Fix the tax code. Well, exploitation isn't illegal. Exploitation is bending the rules. However, Here's argument three. If we know all this now, then there's never been a better reason for Donald Trump to just give us your tax returns. Give us all of them. Show us your tax returns now. It's leaked. It's out there. You and your people haven't denied it. Show us what you made. Show us what you gave to charity. Show us what deductions you took. Show us all of it. And you can prove that this is a mountain that was made out of a molehill. Because if you don't release them now, you would never look shadier.
No, I completely agree. And it's not just a Republican thing. John Kerry came under some questions and some scrutiny for income and earnings as well, too. With
well,
the
anybody
Heinz
should.
Fortune. Sure.
If you're running for president of the United States, we need to know your health and we need to know your financial health.
Doesn't it make you, just in a completely nonpartisan fashion, doesn't it make you outraged that someone, anybody, especially someone running for president, didn't pay taxes for 18 years? And if you're supposed to pay it forward, like you said, and you have the preceding years, the years ahead of you to pay all that, has he been doing that?
Well, but that's it. He can apply the losses to those years, so
yeah.
He doesn't have to pay any additional money. It doesn't mean he didn't pay business taxes in different places. But that's what accountants are surmising. That's what financial experts are surmising happened. And this is important. They haven't denied it. Now, if you're Donald Trump and you're the candidate of the people, and I'm saying about you that you haven't paid taxes for 18 years, and in fact you have, wouldn't you get your tax returns out today? Wouldn't you go, okay, here they are. I'll show them to you. And I suppose there's even a fourth argument here. And the fourth argument here is I don't like the idea that WikiLeaks is doing a Clinton data dump this week. I don't like the idea that the New York Times is reporting on private taxation, which is what this is. This is a leak. But I'd make the argument that Trump can control this story.
Right. And the New York Times, by the way, could be in trouble for this, too. I mean, they could face some legal implications as a paper. Their publishers could.
Let's play a couple things for you here.
Because it's illegal.
From the weekend.
It is illegal to publish unauthorized tax returns.
Yeah, but their argument is we open the mail. We open the mail.
Okay, that's true. Okay.
We open the mail.
Yes, there's a loophole around everything,
right,
isn't
right,
there?
Right. Let's start with this, because I want to make sure you understand that I'm just as annoyed by Hillary Clinton as well. This is leaked audio from a private fundraiser back in February. Remember the 47% Mitt Romney moment? This isn't quite that, but listen.
Some are new to politics completely. They're children of the Great Recession. And they are living in their parents' basement. They feel that they got their education and the jobs that are available to them are not at all what they envision for themselves. So if you're feeling that you're consigned to, you know, being a barista or, you know, some other job that doesn't pay a lot and doesn't have much of a ladder of opportunity attached to it, then the idea that maybe, just maybe, you could be part of a political revolution is pretty appealing.
This is being played off. Now, you heard that quote in context. This is being played off as Hillary being demeaning to kids who don't have jobs. You're living in your parents' basement. I didn't get that out of that at all.
I didn't either.
What she's saying is kids got screwed. My kids, your kids get screwed. This generation had 10 years stolen away from them because of the crash of 2007, 2008. So instead of making money that they would make at 22, they're lucky if they can make it at 32.
And you know what? I have a cousin with a business degree who is working as a barista at Starbucks.
Yeah, and the thing is,
and that's great. I'm glad he's doing it.
Every bit of the economy is affected because if you're not buying your first house until you're 35 or 40, as opposed to buying it when you're 25 or 30, then everything is affected, everything in the economy. Here's more from this private fundraiser back in February, Hillary Clinton on Bernie Sanders.
There's just a deep desire to believe that, you know, we can have free college, free health care. It's a false promise. But I don't think you tell idealistic people, particularly young people, that they bought into a false promise. His ideas are indefensible.
And it's one of the biggest BS lines of the Clinton campaign. This idea that you're going to have debt-free college. There's a million qualifiers to her plan. There's a million yeah buts. There's a million what ifs. She's basically trying to usurp the nonsense of Bernie Sanders' plan and get kids to buy into it. You remember when we were in Iowa?
Right.
For the primary, with all these kids going by, we talked to all these kids. Why supporting Bernie Sanders? Free college,
free college,
man!
Yes.
Free college.
But she's absolutely right. You know, and it's not just Bernie Sanders. If anybody said that and you bought into that and you believe that, it's an idea that you want to hold on to.
Right, but she is trying to sell herself on it, and she can't deliver it either.
No.
We'll take a break for traffic, come back, got a few more for you. Stand by for that. Mary's here with it. Rudy Giuliani has jumped the shark. We continue, and Rudy Giuliani made some news this week. I remember Rudy Giuliani said if Hillary Clinton couldn't control her husband or didn't know he was cheating, she must be stupid. Remember, Hillary Clinton and others have certainly said that Hillary Clinton threatened, blackmailed, and strong-armed the women that Bill Clinton slept with into shutting up or discrediting them.
Yes.
All of that has come out of the mouth of Rudy Giuliani as well.
What happened to him?
It's hard to say. Maybe this is who he was the whole time and we didn't know. I remember I was excited about him running for president in 2008.
Yeah.
And then he decided he was going to blow off Iowa and New Hampshire and start in Florida. Mm. Everybody passed him. And by the time Florida came around, he was out of the race. But these tax revelations, these tax stories that have come from the New York Times, who, by the way, say there's more on the way. Rudy Giuliani says it's nonsense. You don't understand Trump.
So what's your response to this story?
My response is he's a genius. I mean, the reality
is... genius?
Absolute genius. I mean, the man in the art of the deal, this is described. First of all, we're talking about 26 years ago. Perfectly legal. We should get that straight immediately. This is a perfectly legal application of the tax code. And he would have been a fool not to take advantage of it. Not only that, he would have probably breached his fiduciary duty to his investors, to his business. You have an obligation when you run a business.
He's not wrong about that. But what he is wrong about is the fact that Trump couldn't be a bigger hypocrite. Mm-hmm. You can't say you're the man of the people if you're going to exploit all of your tax issues and then hide and claim you can't release your tax returns because of an audit. This is why he's not releasing his tax returns, because the truth about him financially is in there. It's ridiculous. Chris Christie said essentially the same thing, by the way, calling him a genius. So apparently when they had their daily conference call with all the surrogates, Donald Trump said, "You call me a genius. Everybody calls me a genius. Make sure you say genius when you talk about me."
Genius.
Rudy Giuliani as well on accusations about his infidelities, not just Trump's, his too.
When she first heard about Monica Lewinsky, to pretend for 5 or 6 months that it was false.
So she was wrong to stand by her husband?
No, she was wrong to attack the victim. The woman
are you
says,
the right person to level this charge?
Yeah, I'm the right person to level this charge because I've never made such a charge and I prosecuted people who committed rape.
But your past, you have your own infidelity, sir.
Well, everybody does, and I'm a Roman Catholic, and I confess those things to my priest. But I've never ever attacked someone who's been the victim of sexual abuse. And I think you're bringing up my personal life really is kind of irrelevant to what Hillary Clinton did. She's running for president. I'm not. A woman who pretends to be a feminist shouldn't be taking money from countries where women are stoned, where women are killed for adultery, where women can't drive. She's taken hundreds of millions of dollars from those countries.
All right, Mr. Mayor, I will leave it there.
I'm surprised he didn't bring up the Salem witch trial.
He tried to combine three different things there. It's a bit much to claim everyone has cheated. Everyone. Infidelities. Everybody does it. Confess to your priest and move on. Okay, Rudy. Mm-hmm. That's probably Trump's number one surrogate outside of his family, the former mayor of New York.
And couldn't you argue, too, when Hillary Clinton was cheated on, was she not a victim?
Yeah, look, there's no specific evidence that says she did what they claim she did. Having said that, until you are that victim, whether you're in the White House or not, mm-hmm. I don't think you can judge.
Plus, everybody reacts differently.
And
everybody's
It's like judging her because she stayed with it. Look,
right.
Whether the Clintons are still in a traditional marriage or not, or it's arrangement, it's none of our business. Really is.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Dave Ennett, Andrea Darlis, in for Steve Cochran. Steve's taking a few days off. Our next guest, Dave, one of my favorite, I'm not just saying that because he's on hold, one of my favorite all-time ever cast members of Saturday Night Live, Norm Macdonald, has a new book out based on a true story, a memoir, and joins us now. Good morning, Norm.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, good. Thanks.
Steve golfing.
Yeah, Of course. Where else do you think you would be?
Yeah. Well, we'll have plenty of fun with Adam, but yeah. I mean, this guy golfs more than Barack Obama, you know. Jeez.
That's unnecessary. Norm's book, by the way, appears to be great. And I'm sorry I missed him. The last time I worked with Norm, I opened for him at the well, it's not the Hard Rock. What's it called?
House of Blues?
House of Blues, that's it. If you ever get a chance to do stand-up comedy at the House of Blues, don't.
He was funny, Steve. He was on Star Search, the original Star
Search,
he
was.
With
that's
Ed
where,
McMahon.
That's where he was, yeah, and he lost.
And he said he was the only contestant to ever get a half a star.
Yeah, he did. He tanked. Yeah. But somebody saw him. Was it Brandon Tartikoff? Somebody saw him like back in the day and just thought he had some. He's very funny. He's very funny.
Great.
But he was an hour and a half late to the House of Blues. So I was supposed to do like 20 minutes. I ended up doing 45. And then we took a 20-minute intermission, and then he went on. And then he did an hour and a half.
Oh, nice.
He's like Springsteen when he goes on. He'll just say, yeah, so anyway, sorry I'm late. What are you guys doing?
Have
a
you
strong
played,
opener, Norm.
Have you played golf with him?
I've never played golf
with okay, because he sounded like he was a little upset that you didn't ask him to go golf.
He's a good player, I understand. He used to be a big gambler. But anyway, the book's called A Memoir. There's a subtitle to it. What was the subtitle? It's a funny subtitle.
Dave, what was the subtitle to...
Oh, based on a true story.
Yeah,
yes.
That was
yeah, a memoir based on a true story. 9:17, here's a true story. We actually have a White Sox manager?
Yeah, so while we were discussing Rick Renteria, the White Sox sent out the official announcement that Rick Renteria has been named their new manager, replacing Robin Ventura.
All right. Well, good for them. Good move. At 9:18, Kurt Byram is standing by. Kurt, a terrific player on tour. By the way, his brother Tom, I think, may have had his best year ever this year on the Champions Tour. And doing a great job for NBC, Golf Channel. And who better to talk to you than Kurt after that amazing Ryder Cup weekend? Good morning, Mr. Byram.
Morning, Steve. How you doing?
Well, I'm good. I just love the Ryder Cup, man. I didn't miss much of that at all.
It's the best event in golf. They're hands down. There's nothing close. It's an amazing event. It was great to be there this week. Huge crowds and the energy, the energy and the crowd and everything you feel at a Ryder Cup so different than any other event. It was a tremendous week up there in Minneapolis.
There was a lot made of the heckling that went on against Rory and just the players in general. Did you have a sense of that? Was it worse than it normally is? I mean, in Europe, there was a lot of that. Colin Montgomery used to bitch about it. I mean, was it worse than before?
Yeah, it was. I went out. I worked Friday morning, and so I had the afternoon off. I did the first 5 hours, matches on
right.
Friday. So
right.
I had nothing to do in the afternoon. So I went out and I had, I was lucky enough, fortunate enough with my credential, I had inside the ropes access. So I went out and watched Spieth and Reed play their afternoon match. And it was unbelievable, the yahoos that were out there. I should say that somehow they make themselves so much more known than everybody else there, you know what I mean, because of how rude they are.
Sure.
So I heard it. I heard some of the most rude comments you've ever heard towards some of the European wives that were walking along with that match. And, I mean, to the point where there was a guy behind me. I was just I didn't want to become part of, throwing somebody out of there, but I was just that close to turning around and pointing him out to security and having him ejected.
Yeah, and it surprises me, but then again, a lot of people travel for the Ryder Cup, because I can tell you, I played that course a few times. I lived up there for 5 years. That ain't Minnesota, man. That is not a Minnesota way to go or roll. Those had to be out-of-towners.
You would think. I mean, I have no idea. I mean, I didn't talk to any of those kind
right.
of guys. I'm sick of these guys yelling out over the, when everything goes quiet, the guy, the player's getting ready, he's behind the ball maybe, getting ready to walk in and address the ball or something, and one of these, these nuts yell out something, whatever it is. It's just, I'm tired of that.
Sure.
I just, 99% of that crowd was unbelievable. Just there for great golf. They cheered great shots on both sides, both teams. So don't get me wrong. There weren't a lot of those guys. It's just that they make themselves known at the wrong time. And
sure.
they just, it's just, you know, you get sick of it. But it was better towards the end. I think, you know, the PGA of America with its zero-tolerance policy and made it known that, hey, if you do something stupid out there and you're drunk and you're out of control and you say something really rude, we're probably going to eject you from the ground. So from what I hear, it got a lot better.
The level of play was unbelievable. With just a couple of exceptions, it seems like everybody elevated their game, and that's beyond a cliche. When you have guys, what should be the most pressure-packed moments of their lives, putting up 7, 8, 9, 10 birdies like Phil did yesterday. How do they play that well under that kind of pressure?
It never ceases to amaze me, and that's what makes them great players, is that the bigger the moment, and I've seen this for 15 years now doing it from the TV side. I saw it a little bit from the player side back in the day, but more from this TV side. These great players, the bigger the moment, the more pressure they are, 9 times out of 10, they get the job done. They do even better. How many putts went in the hole yesterday?
And it was bombs.
It was incredible. Phil made 10 birdies. Phil Mickelson made 10 birdies against Sergio and got a half. Didn't even
right.
win his match.
Right.
Shot 63. And he had the most pressure of any player on the American team because of, you know, the comments that he made about Oakland Hills and Hal Sutton
yep.
before the thing got started, because he was such a vocal member of the, you know, the, quote, task force that they had. A lot of, you know, what we were hearing is Phil was, you know, basically telling Davis, hey, you know, this is what we're going to do. So he was kind of semi-captain anyway. So under that kind of pressure, it's just amazing. And Reed is off the charts. That guy is a match play animal. I mean, it is a joke. He wanted Rory. Rory wanted him. And Reed, even though he's being outdriven by 20 and 30 yards on every hole, took him down. Took down the best player in the game right now. Rory's been the best player the last month or so. So
there's no question about it.
Phenomenal.
So does his game, Reed's game, get elevated now to a different level too? I mean, how could you not come out of that with more confidence than you've ever had in your life? Not that he was ever shy about how good he is.
He never lacked in the confidence department anyway, but you would think so. The only thing I'll say, for some reason, it's the match play format that seems to bring out the best in him. But yes, I think it should give him tremendous confidence. He can hit every shot. He's a great putter. And then the confidence factor is off the charts. So you would think he would start winning more tournaments than he already has. He's done awfully well in his young career. What is he, 24 or whatever? So he's done awfully well already, but you would expect him. He's the kind of guy that should win a couple times every year at least.
This is a dam break for the U.S. now? Or does it just go back to zero and we see what the team looks like in 2 years?
You know what? I think this is going to go back and forth for quite some time. There are so many good players
right.
on the European side that they're not going to. America's not going to win every time. And you've got, you know, this home crowd really helped. So, you know, we're going to France in 2 years. I've already heard that they're going to try to have 60,000 people a day in Paris in a couple of years. So it's going to be a one-sided European favored crowd. So I think we'll go back and forth, Steve. I think there's just too many good players in the game nowadays, and all you have to have is two or three of your guys a little off, and, you know, you can't hide them forever, and if those guys are off their game, then, you know, they're probably going to cost you a bunch of points.
Last question. As good as this is for golf and bringing in non-traditional golf fans, it would be even better if Tiger got healthy and played next year. He was there this weekend and did a good job of staying in the background. Any rumors, more rumors about him definitely playing this fall or in the spring?
Nothing definite. I'm actually working Napa, the Safeway,
right.
next week up in California, and he said that that's where he wants to start playing again, and I haven't heard one way or another. If I had to guess, it was, you know, it'd be 50-50 whether he'll tee it up. He didn't hit it. As far as I know, he didn't practice last week. You know, he had too many things going on with the Ryder Cup and being in Minnesota. So, you know, knowing him, if he doesn't prepare, he's not going to play.
But right.
on the other hand, the Golf Channel and myself, I mean, we would love to see him tee it up in Napa, because no one still moves a needle like Tiger Woods does. But if he shows up, it's going to be an incredible week out there.
It's my friend Kurt Byram from the Golf Channel and NBC Sports, doing a great job in a very busy summer. Thanks for the time, buddy.
Enjoyed it, Steve. Have a great day up there.
See ya. Kurt Byram. 9:26, a big story still to come. Bill and Wendy at 10. This is 7:20 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Come on! 9:40. Let's all strut. Kevin Powell standing by, baseball guru. A year ago at this time, he was the producer of this show. Now he's a guru. And he has watched, I would say, the vast majority of the 103 Cubs wins. I mean, you've been in-house.
I have. It's one impressive season they put together. And
how much bad ballpark food have you eaten this year?
Oh, well, they feed us pretty good in the press box, so it hasn't been all bad. You know, it's when I can get free food in the press, the media area, the lounge. It's hard to pass that up and go buy a hot dog for $8. So yeah. I've actually been eating fairly okay in the media lounges, but it's been good. I enjoy the free food, Steve.
Well, you know, you started with that no fast food diet with us back in January. You lost a bunch of weight. Have you kept it off?
Yes. I sort of plateaued, though. I haven't gained any, but I haven't lost any.
What'd you lose total? Do you know what the number is? How much weight did you lose?
Probably around 40, 45.
That's 40, awesome. 45 pounds of not eating fast food.
You look great, Kev.
Do you ever let your guard down and eat fast food now?
No, I haven't eaten fast food. My only loophole is 7-Eleven, because I don't know if that should be considered fast food or not. I've debated that with people.
I don't think 7-Eleven rises to the category of fast food.
I can't believe you even eat at 7-Eleven.
It's a loophole. So that's sort of the junk food I'll get sometimes. Those go-go taquitos are hard to resist.
Oh, taquitos. I was going to say, what can you eat at 7-Eleven?
They have pretty good breakfast food, too. The croissant which they have and the biscuit breakfast.
And you put it in that same microwave that everybody puts their disgusting hands in?
Right, they have the microwave conveniently.
Community microwave with people you'd normally cross the street to avoid.
Right, yeah. Well, some of the stuff's on the roller for a few hours.
Yeah, that's right.
You just get it right off the roller.
That's like if you ever go into an old school movie theater and they have the hot dogs,
yeah,
and they're on the skewer, and like one has been there for 50 years, like the Seinfeld episode.
And it's black and wrinkled.
Yeah.
But it tastes good, so whatever.
So anyway, let's talk baseball. Let's go in reverse order here. Rick Renteria, you're a White Sox fan, yeah, first, and Rick Renteria is the new manager of the White Sox. You like it? You don't like it?
Yeah, it's fine. They need more talent on the team. The thing with Ventura is you almost feel bad for him because he's such a likable guy. I don't think anybody ever really said a bad word about him, and he had to deal with just so much garbage with this team. I mean, throughout the season, remember all the way back in spring training, dealing with the Drake LaRoche saga, and then their star pitcher Chris Sales grabbing scissors and cutting up uniforms before a game, and then, you know, dealing with the weird dynamic of Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn. And then, on top of all that, last week they leaked the story to Bob Nightingale, USA Today, that, well, it's up to Robin if he wants to return. Well, how unfair is that to Robin to put him in that position when they don't have the guts to just come out and fire him? I mean, I don't think Ventura won enough games to have the opportunity, first of all, to say, well, it's my choice to stay or not. The White Sox fan base wanted to see him go.
Right.
I mean, it's just, they've been stagnant for the past 8 years, really. They haven't made, you know, there's five seasons with Ventura, well under 500. So I don't know why the White Sox decided to leak that story in the first place, and I don't know why they would have just came out and fired Ventura. It sort of put Robin in a tough spot, and I thought it was an unfair spot, to be honest. So it's kind of messy on the South side.
You know, when a franchise hires a guy who was a star player for that team, it never seems to end well. I mean, obviously with Ditka, it worked out okay for the Bears. It actually worked out with the Blackhawks and Dennis Savard, even though they made the change there. But now Dennis has remained very much a vital part of the Blackhawks. But normally when you hire a guy, I mean, you hire a guy who was a star player and with the franchise for which he played, it just usually has an uncomfortable conclusion. And, yeah, I think that's what this kind of does. Yeah. And it just doesn't, it's never real nice and tidy.
Yeah, I don't think the White Sox helped themselves by leaking that story and sort of making this. I mean, what they should have done is this: after yesterday's game, they shouldn't have leaked the story last week. And after yesterday's game, they both could have just shook hands and said, "Guys, you know, we're moving in different directions. It's time to move on." Everyone knew Ventura likely wasn't coming back, so I don't know why the White Sox decided to make it a story last week and leak that story, likely from the front office. Kenny Williams.
Well, look, I'm hoping Robin got a fat check to take a bullet and say it was his idea, regardless of the way it was going to go. I think he probably did want to leave anyway. And Jerry is really bad at firing people, as he has been for years. So right. Maybe it's right. Way to go. All right, Cubs, 103 wins, most since 1910. Is that right?
Yeah.
Correct.
Doesn't mean anything now. Playoffs start Friday. Who do you want of the two teams that are possibles?
The Mets, because if you're a Mets pitcher, you're likely injured right now. They have Noah Syndergaard and Bartolo Colon in their starting rotation, and then just sort of thrown some guys into the rotation to fill it out. I mean, Syndergaard's scary. Okay, that's one. You look at the Giants, they have Bumgarner, Cueto, Samardzija. That's a lot tougher than what you would face with the Mets. Now, I know the Mets that played the Cubs tough this year, but some of those games the Mets – one, they had a much healthier team back then. That was earlier in the season. The Mets right now are completely banged up, and specifically on the pitching end. So to me, the Giants are the scarier of the two teams.
Disagree.
You disagree?
I disagree.
Oh, I want to see the Mets.
I disagree. First of all, the Giants will have to travel cross country to play the Mets. Then they'll go from, if they win, go from New York here. You wouldn't see Bumgarner in game one anyway because he will have pitched the White. Now you will see Cueto probably and then Samardzija. I agree. That's a tough matchup. But the Cubs played well against the Giants this year. The Giants were one of the worst teams in baseball after the All-Star break. Between the two, plus you've got that whole nagging thing about the Mets last year. Now there would be payback for the Cubs. That would be a potential motivation, but I don't think that really even is something they're thinking about.
Well, let's let Andrea decide. You have the Giants. Kevin has the Mets. Andrea.
I say Mets. I'm with Kevin.
Sorry, Dave.
Retribution, baby. We want payback from being swept, right,
which I
Kev?
Just said was not even a factor
That's
in this.
That's a factor for me. Hey, Kevin, I have a question. I know Joe Maddon hasn't come out with the lineup yet, but you and I have talked about this, too. I think Hayward has been...
Matt Merton is not going to play.
I know. I'm off. I'm done with that. He actually tweeted, good luck. He'll be watching his team from the sidelines. Anyway, Jason Hayward having a subpar season. Do you see any way Joe Maddon sits him and puts Zobrist in right, Baez at second, and keeps Chris Bryant at third?
That's a possibility. I think the lineup will likely look more of what we saw yesterday with Javi Baez at third and Chris Bryant at left and Hayward still at right, Zobrist at second. I prefer yesterday's lineup because Javi Baez should be in the lineup as often as possible. And Chris Bryant's done just fine in left field. So, I don't know, Maddon hasn't budged on Hayward yet. He hasn't really taken him out of the lineup. So, you know, unless it's sort of worst case scenario, they lose game one and Hayward struggles. I still see him in the lineup come Friday. I do.
We can tackle this more down the road, but let's say we're in the NLCS in two rounds. And in the NLCS in two rounds, it gets to be a game five, and game five is at Wrigley. Actually, it wouldn't be because they'd have home field, but let's just play along. It's a potentially decisive game at Wrigley. Let's say it's game six. And game six at Wrigley, I think the best way, as an homage to Cubs fans, is you bring Pryor back to pitch.
Oh, here we go.
You put Alou in left field.
Gonzalez at short.
And you have Bartman sitting in the stands.
No.
I like that. A throwback? You know, maybe a throwback Thursday.
Let's really see how good this team is. Pryor hasn't pitched in 5 years. Alou is 340 pounds. I'm still peeing on his hands. Except now it's an accident. Gonzalez hasn't played short except for the local softball team in forever. Let's put him out there. Let's see what happens.
Oh, I'm not opposed to it, Steve. I'll run it by Joe Maddon next time I see him.
My heart just skipped a beat.
Tell him it's my idea.
Yeah. Hey, Mr. Maddon, Steve Cochran has an idea for you. Let me run this by you.
And after he rolls his eyes and walks away, let me know. All right, buddy. Nice job by you. Yeah.
All right, thanks, guys. I'll see you soon.
See you later. That's Kevin Powell, is it? Powell?
It is.
Kevin Powell.
Yes. It is.
Baseball guru. Did you know Boog Powell's grandson, the great former Orioles first baseman?
Don't
Did you know
think
that?
They're related. Yeah. I think
Boog?
Yeah, Grandpa Boog. It's Bill and Wendy at 10 on 720 WGN. I got three quickies for you. Three things, three quickies. What you got to say? You know the most distinctive name in every state in the country? The most distinctive name. Not the most common last name, but the most distinctive. In other words, it's not just statewide. Nationally, this name comes up as well. So the most distinctive name in each state. Let's go with Illinois. Most distinctive last name in the state.
Pappas.
Pappas is incorrect.
I thought you meant my family. Yes. My people.
Dave, do you have a guess?
Daly?
Mary, do you have a guess?
That's what I was going to guess.
Carlson.
Oh, I know a Carl. I know two Carlsons.
I don't know a single Carlson in Illinois.
I know many Carlsons.
Yeah, you do. You know Susan Carlson.
Yes, I do. That's one.
Okay.
My brother-in-law, Bob Carlson.
How is Bob? How about Wisconsin? Do you know the most distinctive name in Wisconsin? This is going to so make sense when you hear it.
Rogers.
Schultz.
No.
Do you think Schultz drinks Schlitz?
Well, Wisconsin's got to be something with a son, like a Johnson.
Wisconsin and Michigan are both Schultz. I got one more for you. What is it? Pick a state.
Minnesota.
Minnesota? Yeah, you can probably get this one.
Or California.
Minnesota Olson. California. You should get this one as well. California and Texas. You should get both of these. California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas. I'm going to shock you. They're Hispanic names.
Oh, I was going to say Arquette.
Texas, Hernandez, New Mexico, Sanchez, Arizona, and California, Lopez.
Oh.
This is the important information I'm bringing you.
That's right.
Pennsylvania?
Pennsylvania did not submit a name. No, Snyder. The Adams. People that make the pretzels.
Or
right.
Wendy?
Of course.
Yeah. Or Wendy, that's right.
Wendy, you from Pennsylvania?
She is now. And congratulations. Congratulations to Yisrael Cristal, who celebrated his bar mitzvah this weekend at 113.
113?
113. Isn't that a cool story?
Mazel tov.
100 years late, and all of his friends that would normally come over and play and bring presents couldn't because they're all dead. Back with Bill and Wendy next on 720 WGN.